The Songhai Empire was one of the most important empires which rose around the Niger River from the middle of the 15th century through to the late 16th century. Clearly, the Niger River itself was a fundamental reason for this. The Sahel is a relatively dry part of West Africa, and so the Niger River is fundamental as a conduit means of transport, obviously for irrigation, for growing crops, and so that was fundamental. Also, the region, the capital of Songhai was Gao, and Gao had always been important to the emergence of West African empires and civilizations. A recent book by the American historian Michael Gomez, African Dominion, argues very much for the centrality of Gao. And the archaeologist Timothy Insull has also done a lot of important work to show just how important Gao had been in the rise of civilizations in this part of West Africa from the 7th, 8th centuries onwards. However, prior to the rise of Songhai in the 15th century, the accent had shifted further west to the Empire of Mali. Mali had arisen really in the 13th century. It became very famous in the 14th century when its emperor Mansa Musa performed the Hajj to Mecca and is said to have taken 60,000 people in his caravan across the Sahara with him. But pressures on Mali began to grow in the late 14th into the early 15th century, partly because of attacks from Tuareg nomads from the Sahara, and a general resistance in the empire to the growing autocracy of Mali, which was a militarized empire, depended on gold mining, gold producers, but at the same time had quite authoritarian power structures by the beginning of the 15th century. At the same time, Mali was also threatened by the beginnings of Portuguese voyages down the African coast, which created a different market for gold, for example, and therefore competition, which eroded the power of Mali. So in 1434, the province of Songhai, which had been under Mali's rule, rebelled. And in 1464, it finally began to usurp Mali's authority. And the region, this region in general, was therefore fundamental. There was already major administrative frameworks in place through the Empire of Mali in Timbuktu with its university and many scholars who were there. Arabic was a language of governance, a written language, could be used as a legal language, of course, as well. And so those were also important reasons why this was a region where a powerful empire such as Songhai could arise. And in terms of trade, Songhai had access to the termini of the Trans-Saharan trade and was also had access to the markets of the Gold Coast where gold was produced, and also Kano, which in northern Nigeria, which was one of the most important economic and diplomatic centres in this part of Africa. So it was very strategically located on the Niger River, not too far from Kano, not too far from the gold markets, gold fields, and near the Trans-Saharan termini, and it had the relevant administrative languages and infrastructure to rise as it did in the mid-15th century. Well, the two fundamental figures were the first two emperors, Soni Ali and then Askia Mohammed. Soni Ali, who ruled for a long time, 1464 to 1493, and really what's most important about him was his military prowess. He greatly expanded Songhai's military reach, as I've mentioned, until this time, 1464, Songhai was largely a province of Mali. And Soni Ali was a feared warrior. He, in fact, died on return from battle. And he managed to coalesce different social and military forces in Songhai and through his leadership and drive Songhai's military conquests in various different directions in the region. So he was a very important figure. He also, I think, another important aspect of his rule, which isn't always emphasised, is that he was very much a go-between for the different religious forces in Songhai. So you had African religions, and he was a practitioner of African religions, but you also had Islam, which was very powerful and important because of the role of Trans-Saharan trade to North Africa, to places like Cairo and Tunis, and also because of the role of Arabic as a language of government, a written language of government. So because he was somebody who both practiced African religions but also did practice Islam, he was able to draw together the different religious and therefore ideological forces within Songhai. So he was a very important figure. And then you had Askia Mohammed. Askia Mohammed followed Soni Ali. He took an Islamic title, Askia. And whereas Soni Ali, according to the scholars who wrote the histories of Songhai, who were never obviously somewhat biased, but they argued that Soni Ali had really not been a friend of Timbuktu and its scholarly class, clamped down on them in various ways, and they were much more in favour of the regime which began with Askia Mohammed, who had a more Islamic outlook in terms of governance and religious practice, and also linked Songhai to the caliphates of Baghdad and North Africa. So he, for example, also performed the pilgrimage to Mecca in the late 1490s, and therefore, just as Mansa Musa's pilgrimage had brought a fundamental awareness of the Empire of Mali to the courts in Cairo and in Baghdad. So that was also true of Askia Muhammad. So the Sonia and Askia dynasties developed both politically and historically over time. Their commercial links were fundamental to Mediterranean Sahelian centres like Karno, as I've already mentioned, and Cairo. The use of Arabic, I think also a very important aspect of these dynasties was their cosmopolitanism, actually. These were very cosmopolitan empires. There was a core to them, which were the ruling clans of Songhai. But beyond that, there were many different languages spoken, many different peoples, many different beliefs. And the fact that both Soni and Askia dynasties were able to incorporate all of that diversity was a very important part of that. But also, as I've mentioned, there was a fundamental evolution from Soni Ali's rule, where that pluralism was fundamentally incorporated in the person of the emperor of Soni Ali, and the Askia dynasties, which followed from 1493 through to 1591, when the Songhai Empire fell, when Islam's role as a scholarly religion and as a religion of also which bound Songhai to North Africa through trade, the shared religion of the diaspora traders, and the role of diasporas themselves in creating pluralism in Songhai. So over time, learning, as Songhai became more and more established, learning became fundamentally associated with the Askias. So some of the Askias became very famous for cultivating libraries, expanding the reach of the book trade, for example. All of these things became an important and integral element of the history of Songhai in the 16th century, and once it had been established and had overcome its rivals such as Mali. So there was a sort of trajectory from an expansionist moment under Soni Ali, his military rule, his prowess in that regard, and then the consolidation of empire and the integration of learning, of scholars, into the framework of long-distance trade, which was what fundamentally gave the economic basis to the empire. Timbuktu became more and more important. So Timbuktu was the centre of learning in the region. It had a famous university, and a university which, by the way, was not solely related towards Islamic knowledge, but also geared towards the study of astronomy, of science, of mathematics. All of these things were studied in Timbuktu. And it became more important as the scholarly class, the ulama, as they were known, their reach was more and more influential in the court of the Askias. So it developed a global reputation as a centre of learning, not only in Songhai, but also with scholars coming from across the Islamic world, from Arabia, from North Africa, to spend a lot of time in Timbuktu. And also because this helped also to provide the administrative class for the empire, because this was the centre of learning, the centre of the formation of people through the university system, that helped to create the administrative class which allowed the empire to flourish. So all of this was very important in the development of Songhai. And it's interesting there to compare Songhai to, for example, Spain in the 14th and 15th and 16th centuries, where the University of Salamanca also trained the scholarly class and was a fundamental part of the way in which the administrative class in Spain was able to develop itself and then administer the new empire of Spain in the 16th century. So there's actually quite an interesting analogy and comparison there, and it helps to explore and explain why Timbuktu became important. So the Songhai Empire collapsed in 1591, a very precise date. There was an invasion from Morocco, and the Moroccan army crossed the Sahara, defeated the Songhai army at the Battle of Tambikoko, and many of the Songhai warriors who hadn't been killed in the battle fell on their swords in this battle. And Songhai's ruling class collapsed, and the empire divided into lots of different statelets known as the Armour Kingdoms after that. So that was the fundamental moment in which Songhai's collapse. And that was the end, really, of the empires of West Africa, which had gone from the 10th century in the Empire of Ghana, which was located in what's now Mauritania, its heartland, to Mali, and then to Songhai. So 550 years of this history then coming to an end in 1591. So why did that happen? Well, there were sort of structural reasons and then more immediate reasons. The first was the fact that in the 1580s, there'd been a series of different Askias, one after another. There'd been a lot of infighting, and it was a moment of real political fragility in the Songhai Empire. And so that immediate political instability and crisis created lack of leadership, which was probably one of the causes for the military defeat, because when we think about it, you know, an army which is in its home territory shouldn't really be defeated by an army which has had to cross the Sahara Desert. So that was clearly symptomatic of the fragility at that particular time. There are structural reasons as well, however. There was the first actually relates to the relationship to North Africa. I mentioned before that Askia Mohammed had himself performed the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca. And in fact, one of the sources we have on that, Al-Wazan, also known as Leo Africanus, tells us that he, in fact, this created a lot of debt. A lot of debt, economic debt, was created through that pilgrimage, which was very expensive. This helped to create an imbalanced economic relationship between Songhai and North Africa. And so I think that axis of economic power and the economic relationship being out of balance also was compounded by the fact that in the 16th century, one of the things that emerges is a shift in economic power in West Africa as a whole, both towards Kano, as I mentioned before, an important economic centre in northern Nigeria, and the caravan routes moving further and further east towards Kano, taking power away from the caravan routes and the economic power of Songhai, but also because of the Atlantic trade, which becomes more and more important in the 16th century, important gold trade from the Gold Coast, which was exported by the Portuguese. And so Songhai essentially is caught in the middle of those shifting forces, which means that its economic power is simply not what it was. That may, of course, indeed have been one of the factors leading to the political instability in Songhai in the 1580s. And so all of these factors came together to mean that when there was a conflict with Morocco, with the Moroccan kingdom over the salt mines of Tahaza, and the Moroccan king sent an ultimatum to Songhai, which Songhai's emperor didn't want to adhere to, Songhai was in a very weakened position, which I think, combined with all the other factors I've mentioned, explains how and why the empire unraveled as it did. Songhai's empire did have a powerful legacy in West Africa, partly as an idea. I think the idea of empire and the importance of those long-standing, powerful political systems, it still remains powerful today, I think. As I mentioned, Michael Gomez's recent book on African dominion looks at how African political structures did have so much power and governed over wide regions and how that collapsed during the era of the transatlantic slave trade. The relationship of those factors, I think, is very powerful and important. I think also beyond that, systems of government, the role of clans, the pluralism of an empire which sat between Islam and African religions, these are all features which then came to characterise many different kingdoms in subsequent parts of West Africa. And they were features which were first articulated and brought to their fullest extent in the empires of the Sahel, in Mali, and then in Songhai. And I think that was its fundamental legacy, I think, in West African history, is this ability of, and the requirement actually, of rulers to be able to adopt plural frameworks in order to sit between different constituencies, both at home and in their international trade.